Today on Vox Talks Economics, COVID-19's impact on innovation. Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name's Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics, so remember to subscribe. Follow us on Instagram as well. The COVID-19 crisis inspired extraordinary innovation, and not just among economists. A new ebook from CEPR examines the impact on countries, organisations and industries, and whether that momentum in innovation can continue. Carsten Fink of the World Intellectual Property Organization and Reinhilde Voiglers of KU Leuven are two of the editors of that ebook, and they join me now. Carsten, hello.
Hello, Tim. Nice to speak to you.
And Reinhilde, welcome.
Happy to be here.
Historically, have crises been good or bad for innovation? And is this crisis like the ones that have gone before?
Well, indeed, in a world of creative destruction where innovation thrives in, I think innovation always needs a bit of a crisis to create room for new stuff here. But of course, the crisis that we are talking about now is a very big shock here that not only creates new opportunities here, but also was a big shock to the innovation system itself that innovation also had to adapt to here. So in that respect, our initial expectations were that because of the specificities of this shock, which was also because of the pandemic and all the restrictions involving that and the breakdown of global value chains, also for innovation, we were actually expecting that this would also affect the innovation resilience, also access to finance, which is typically a big problem in lots of crises. Think of the big crisis in the 30s and also the one of 2008. So that were basically our expectations that in essence, innovation would definitely also feeling this shock here. But actually, to our pleasant surprise, we also did see the creative part of innovation also using this as momentum to respond to the crisis.
And in this ebook that you've put together, when we're talking about innovation, is it just innovation in response to the crisis? We all heard about the vaccines, of course, and healthcare. Are we talking about much bigger types of innovation, new products that came up, new services, I mean, new ways of doing business that we had to think about?
Yeah, we certainly look beyond vaccines and healthcare. We generally assess how the whole innovation landscape was affected. I think what is interesting, one of the findings that especially in the second phase of the pandemic, 2021, we saw this broad entrepreneurship wave centered around digital innovation, around e-commerce, that was really a result of the pandemic disruption. But I should also say, we look at those parts of the innovation economy that haven't altogether done too well. For example, one of the things that we learned was that fields of mechanical engineering, you know, that were already on a decline before the crisis started, really didn't do too well as a result of the pandemic.
You look at this from the point of view of countries in the first part of the book. Which countries did particularly well at innovating during the pandemic? Which countries didn't do quite so well?
Picking up on what I just said, countries like Germany and Japan, if you look at measures of patent counts, were the ones that were more negatively affected by the pandemic. On the other hand, if you look at annual statistics on patent filing for China and the Republic of Korea, it's almost hard to notice that the pandemic happened. I think that on the one hand has to do with the fact that at least in the pandemic's first 2 years, those two economies were less heavily affected compared to others. But also what is interesting that these are two economies that have a technological focus on digital communications, computer technologies, and these were the kinds of technological fields that saw quite vibrant growth in the course of the pandemic.
I spoke to a lot of organizations at the beginning of the pandemic, and everyone was talking about digitization. It was the big buzzword in business at that time, and a lot of them were saying they had to do 3 years of innovation in 6 months, partly because no one could go to the office. Overall, did firms manage to successfully innovate in the ways that they worked?
this big digital wave was something that we already saw before the crisis here. So it was definitely the state of technology, of the digital technology, was already advancing. And we did already see those businesses being successful in adopting these digital technologies in their innovation process, others less so. And what we saw during the crisis was a bit of an acceleration of this, in the sense that the ones that were already actively using these new digital technologies to adopt in their business practices and their innovation processes, they continue to do so and were very successful. And also because demand was now more responsive, actually were also very successful in that. It could also have been a momentum for catching up for the ones that were before the crisis laggards in terms of digital technology adoption. But here, the evidence doesn't seem to suggest that there was a strong catching up here. So the divide continues to be. Everybody was indeed using these digital technologies more, but still the leaders way more effectively, way more faster during the crisis and after, compared to the laggards here. So in that respect, and that's still something that we need to monitor also in the near future, is the extent to which this divergence and this increasing gap, whether that continues to hold here, and whether the laggards still will be able to catch up faster than now. But definitely the leading companies that were already very active in these, in using these technologies, continue to do so during the crisis and were able to really be much more resilient in terms of innovation.
This is an example, isn't it, that innovation just isn't necessarily all about what economists have traditionally used to measure innovation by counting patents. It's also about new ways of organizing, new ways of creating services as well. In this ebook, you don't just focus on patents, I guess.
No, we don't. We, of course, have a close look at patent data because these are the ones that are available. And, you know, in many ways, they capture important technological progress. But you're absolutely right in saying that there's a lot of innovation that happens outside the patent system. Organizational innovation in the service sector is only very partially picked up by the patent system. We employ other measures in the book. We use another form of intellectual property, trademarks. Trademarks capture essentially new goods, services, companies that enter the marketplace, and they're really sort of useful measure of entrepreneurship. And precisely what we saw in trademark data was that in 2021, there was really an unprecedented boom in trademark filings around the world. And that is also confirmed. Some of the chapters in the book employ measures of startup activity, other entrepreneurship data, and they essentially confirm that picture.
2 years ago, we were all hanging on the news from the major drug companies about their vaccine research. It was an amazing success story that they managed to bring vaccines to the market so quickly. Is the story of COVID innovation in healthcare really about those big drug companies, or did it spur innovation amongst smaller companies, a broader set of companies as well?
Well, I'm actually very glad that you raised that question here, because that's usually how we associate this with the new vaccines. And then we have Pfizer and AstraZeneca. And then, but actually, if you take a good look at the story of these vaccines here, and the ones particularly that were fast and very effective, the mRNA ones, those were actually built on a much longer process of very risky research and development that big pharma companies didn't engage in because they thought it was too risky, but which was all a play of young startup companies, science-based startup companies like BioNTech and Moderna and CureVac. And it was these companies that were supported initially by a few philanthropists and private funders rather than large-scale support by public funding, although there was a bit of DARPA funding. And it's actually thanks to those smaller companies and financiers that were willing to take these initial risks here that this technology, mRNA technology, was able to develop sufficiently so that it was ready to actually be exploited with the COVID vaccine here. And it's thanks to those companies that brought the technology ripe for development. And then, of course, we needed also the large companies to be able to scale up production and the distribution with their expertise that they had in clinical trials and production. We needed those large companies, but it's really the whole ecosystem that you needed. Also, the small young some companies, if they would not have been willing to take the risk in the initial years of the mRNA one, the big companies would never have been able to be so successful with their vaccines. They complement each other, but you need each piece of the ecosystem here.
It was remarkable how united governments were in supporting businesses during the COVID-19 crisis. But of course, that can't go on forever. And now that support is being rolled back, should we worry about the impact that that might have on continuing innovation?
Yes, I think so. And I think this is a story that continues to evolve. And also where we, as we put together this book, also had to adjust our story, because I think what has happened over the last few months clearly is that because of tighter monetary policies all over the world, risk capital really has dried up. And I think that really has affected the funding opportunities for many of the companies that came to being over the last 2 years or so in the course of the crisis. I think we find overall that the policy support during the pandemic was really important for companies to stay afloat, especially companies with a fundamentally sound business model that were hit by the severe demand shocks of the crisis. It was important for keeping skilled workers employed. It was important to prevent the destruction of intangible capital. So I think all of that was really positive. But I think as we now enter this post-COVID period, and COVID is really only one of, I think, influences that explains why we have tighter monetary policies now, but clearly there has been a detrimental impact.
And of course, now we are entering into a new political era, it seems, as well, a retreat from globalization, economic nationalism, nationalism, full stop. If I were to make you omnipotent policymakers, we ask this sometimes on Vox Talks, and you could pick a policy that would preserve this innovation that has been so important over the last couple of years, What would that policy be? Reinhilde, you go first.
So what I think is really important for an innovation system to be vibrant is that it's sufficiently large scale and at global, so it can really operate on a global scale as much as possible here, so that it can recruit talents wherever they are located and also sell their innovative ideas wherever. So that global dimension is so essential for innovation, that any kind of protectionism or closing borders or making any international transfers of know-how more complicated or more costly is something that's a really long-term negative effect on the innovation system here. And we also did see this in the COVID crisis, that despite all the lockdowns and the problems that we had imposed by all the regulations that were imposed by the governments, that still the international dimension of the innovations continued to hold. So there was still a lot of international collaboration for all the new patents and trademark that we saw, and also international innovators applying for patents in other countries. So that international dimension, even during COVID, remained a very essential component here. And that's something we really need to maintain here. And a second important dimension is a policymaker. I think it's very important to create a long-term stable environment for innovation here, so that the uncertainty that is a killer for lots of innovating, the regulatory uncertainty, that should definitely be avoided here. So creating a long-run, stable, supportive environment is, I think, very important.
And Carsten, what would you add to that?
Not much. I think Reinhilde really mentioned the two key points. I would reiterate and maybe elaborate on the last point. I think, as Reinhilde pointed out, these messenger RNA technologies could easily have been missed. They were obviously years, if not decades, in the making, and they were, in a sense, ready to deploy it, once the pandemic hit. And who knows what the next crisis looks like. We know of some of the long-term crises like climate change, that are out there. And obviously finding solutions, technological solutions, to address them does rely on functioning innovation ecosystem that really needs to be sustained. My hope from the pandemic is that given the success, especially of the vaccines, but also other innovations, that, you know, society's appreciation of the importance of innovation has actually increased, and that this makes the case for funding the science sector, you know, funding highly risky innovative ventures, that case is stronger than ever. And I think all of that is important. I think research shows there continue to be very high social return to investments in innovation that pay off, because there are a lot of failures down the road. That's the nature of innovation. But ultimately, society really benefits from them. So my hope is that the crisis has actually helped to make that case.
Well, we could not have had a clearer demonstration of the value of innovation. Let us hope that our memories are not short. Thank you for talking about it today. Thank you for putting together the ebook, Carsten.
Thank you, Tim.
And Reinhilde.
You're welcome.
The ebook is called Resilience and Ingenuity. It is, of course, a free download from VoxEU. And the editors are Carsten Fink, Jan Menier, Andrew Toole, and Reinhilde Voigles. This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. Every week we bring you the most important latest research. If you like ingenuity and innovation, well, Vox Talks Economics is where you'll find it. And when you subscribe, you will find more than 200 episodes now. So whatever type of economics you like, there is a Vox Talk waiting for you.